is Sam Sargent on DNS security.
Alright, all good?
Yeah.
Great. DNS security, as Dean and Johnny alluded to earlier, it's been a very interesting year for security issues. Before we get on to that, there's actually a current event that's happening right now. Your name server may be used as a DDoS amplifier. If you run that command, plus a little bit of other trickery, which I'm sure you can work out, and you send a very small 17-byte query to a name server, it will... assuming it's configured in the right way, it will send 500 bytes back. If you spoof the source address of the UDP packet, it'll send it to wherever you want. So you get a botnet running those commands, send it off, and you can crush a target. It's happening right now, not really sure why. It's obviously programmed to be happening. There's a lot of investigation going on. Yeah.
You've been going for about 4 or 5 days?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I've seen that traffic.
You've seen queries coming to your name server?
I've seen the queries coming back.
Yep.
About four.
You're not the target, you're one of the amplifiers. You're not the target, you're one of the amplifiers. Yeah, so New Zealand networks are seeing it, so no doubt there's hundreds of name servers around the world. So worth investigating your traffic and seeing what you can do to stop it. The slightly more interesting stuff that's going on is all about cache poisoning. Cache poisoning, simply tricking a name server into loading incorrect data into the cache. So then all the clients that use that name server will be sent to the wrong location. Obviously, I'm sure you can imagine, can be used for very interesting and nefarious purposes. A couple of versions of poisoning. There's the easy version. You get the server to ask the question that you want to give the false answer to. You watch the query go by on the wire, and then you spoof the answer packet and match the details you see. Source IP, destination port, and a query ID. Quick little diagram of how that works. If you're the attacker, you send the query off. Because the name server will send its own query. In that example, 0x3f8 happens to be the query ID. As it goes by on the wire, cool effect there, you just send the answer packet back with whatever you want to poison the cache with. And you're done. The cache now contains your answer. In the meantime, the real answer comes back very slowly from the real authoritative name server, but it doesn't care anymore. That question's already been answered. It gives up. Nice and easy, if you can intercept the traffic. The hard version, you have to guess. There's all the same details to spoof, but you have absolutely no idea what the numbers are. That query ID is a 16-bit number, 65,000 possibilities. You just have to try really, really hard to get it. You send a query again. In the meantime, you send some false answers and you try and guess the right query ID. I've used four as an example. You'd be trying thousands. You'd try all of them if you could, depending on how long it takes. You're hoping that while your query is going off to the real authoritative name server and an answer is coming back, in the meantime, you manage to sneak in and get the right ID. If you do, voila, you've poisoned the cache. In the meantime, the answer comes back and again, we just throw it away. Or burn it. It's not too bad to mitigate. As I say, there's a very small window of opportunity. 16-bit number. Previously, in older versions of Bind and other name server software, those IDs were sequential. So it was very easy to guess. You get the query, you get the server to send you a legitimate query. They're up to ID number 64. 65 must be next. I'll just start spoofing from around then. These days, they use a lot better random number distribution. And so the window of opportunity is very, very small. It's not very practical to do anything with it. But as I said before, if the attacker can intercept the traffic, all bets are off. they can get the right number and they can forward in your cache. Another method is using the additional section of the protocol. You get the server to ask your name server a legitimate question, and you respond with a set of records and say, oh, and by the way, here's a poison record. So again, we send off a query, it will be to a domain name that I control, or an attacker controls. When the query is replied to, we give it the legitimate answer, or any answer you wish, and add into the additional section some other records that you want to poison. They are always back on the conference DNS server, or the DNS server, and the cache is poisoned. In very recent versions of Bind and other name servers, the additional records need to be relevant to your original query. So if you supply an additional record that says ns1.nznog.org happens to be this IP, that's okay if they were originally asking for the record for www.nznog.org. If you happen to be asking for evil.com and then you include nznog.org, well, that isn't relevant to the question I asked, I'm going to drop that. So there's two flavours. There's spoofing, where you guess all the right numbers and just throw packets at it, or have it using the additional section so you control an evil name server. So all the noise this year was about Dan Kaminsky's attack. Early in the year, he started talking to the vendors and said, hey, look, I've got this attack and I need you to patch around it. So there was a lot of work done in secret for the most part. It wasn't publicly known where software was being patched and things were being fixed up. In early July, the details were still kept secret, but the actual existence of the exploit was announced, and updated software was released simultaneously for various name server packages. The vendors did quite a good job of all releasing at the same time, but it created a huge amount of interest because there was no detail at the stage, but suddenly everyone was releasing updated software all on the same day. Later in the month, some very smart people managed to work out the details, or perhaps they leaked the details, and exploit code was available around that sort of time, within very short time frame as well. And so in early August, at DEF CON, I think, Dan Kaminsky talked about the actual details of the attack. So it's a very clever combination of the attacks we've seen already. I send a query, in this case, for aaa.nznog.org. Send off the DNS server, and I've only included one example here, but I've spoofed a answer packet saying it doesn't exist. Oh, and by the way, www.nznog.org, a relevant additional section, is this IP address here, good old B6. While that query is going off to the real authoritative name server, I'm sending thousands and thousands of packets trying to get my answer in first. Unfortunately, didn't work out this time. The old way of doing things, that was it. You didn't work. The cache has the real record. You can't do anything more to overwrite that record. But because we're using a made-up domain name, and it doesn't matter that it doesn't exist, we just try again. AAAB, or AAB. And we do exactly the same thing. We send the query off, we fake some answers, we try again. We need thousands of packets to try and make this happen. Still didn't work, we just keep trying. There's a statistical birthday attack where the more chances you have to try this, eventually it's likely it's going to work. If I think Dan Kaminsky said 10 minutes on a modern internet connection will be enough to get all your packets in. Eventually you'll get in before the real answer comes back. You've successfully poisoned the cache, and you can also specify a TTL, a lifetime, for that record of however long you want, and it's there forever. It won't ask again, it knows the right records, it's all done. On Linux or a Mac, you can run dig, and it will use your current recursive resolver that you've got configured, just do a little port test, and it'll check, are you vulnerable? It'll give you some certainty about a vague feeling of confidence that it's going to work. On Windows, visit Dan Kaminsky's website, and there's a little button you can click test my DNS now. The way we fix this is, or one of the ways we mitigate this, is source port randomization. The packets going out from my recursive DNS server previously just came from port 53. So we knew when we were spoofing a packet, just send it back to port 53 and it'll be fine. If we randomize that, we're increasing the difficulty. Instead of 16 bits, now 32 bits to try and get right, and it's just going to be harder. The amount of time is shorter. Perhaps you could still do it. It's going to be more of a long shot. The window of opportunity is much, much smaller. Patches, you should have upgraded. They've been available for over 6 months now. However, if you're behind net, and a lot of name servers do seem to be behind net, it quite likely is going to change source port and may completely undo all that good work. So maybe check. And load balances, yeah. So maybe check your implementation. There's a few vectors of how this attack can originate. If you're a customer of a service provider, you can just send queries to their DNS server and just keep going, keep trying again and again. A lot of service providers, including some of you in this room, have open resolvers. They're not set up to only answer queries and be recursive for their clients. Anyone on the planet can start this happening and eventually poison the cache. So it's worthwhile making sure your resolvers are configured correctly. And I can send you an email with a link to a web page, add some JavaScript, and I should trigger a whole pile of DNS queries just to keep running while you're looking at this page. So, poisoning's bad, but why do we care? Should we ever assume DNS was correct anyway? Well, our customers do, and you probably do as well. Most obvious is the attack it in the middle scenario. I poison the cache for large ISP, and I say, yourbank.com comes to my server. When you just come along, I say, hey, what's your username and password? Or what's your credit card number? And they'll give it to me. They won't know. So it looks just the same as a phishing attack. No one's going to pick up that the DNS is going to the wrong place. If the website looks fine, great. A lot of sites use two-factor authentication. It makes it a little harder. I could always then configure my server to go and ask the real server for the real two-factor authentication details, ask you the question, make it all work that way. Perhaps. Or I just don't ask you at all and you enter your password anyway. Someone said to me, HTTPS fixes this. It has special warnings and things. Yeah, that's not going to work. I guarantee you, everyone in this room has told a family member or someone at your office, yeah, just click continue. Just hit yes, it's fine, don't worry about it. And you're breeding a psychology of those warnings don't matter. It tells you exactly what's about to happen. You might be connecting to a website that's pretending to be your bank, which could put your confidential information at risk. Yeah, it sounds fine. It's only my bank, no one cares. Click continue. Why do we do this? Shortly after the attack was published, an ISP, a larger ISP in China, was victim to poisoning, and users who typoed some domains were sent to a malware site, which infected their computer and gave rise to a botnet. Denial of service, perhaps, as well. I could take a competitor's website offline by poisoning the record and sending it to somewhere else. Black hole, it doesn't matter. I could create fake SPF records, perhaps, and say, outbound email, it can only come from a loopback address. And some places will start dropping their email, perhaps. I could create a poison entry for Google and send it all to Dean. I'm sure Dean's home connection can deal just fine with all Google's traffic. But it's not just the web as well. A lot of people think, it's the internet, web, email, that's all we have. There's many, many protocols that you'll use. It's FTP. Hey, what's your password? Thanks very much. I'll go and log into the real server now. OpenSSH, I'm sure you've also seen a host key warning. Lots and lots of text, big capital letters, and it refuses to continue. That's good behaviour. That's what web browsers perhaps should do when they encounter that error mode, but they don't. So OpenSSH gets a big tick. It'll actually refuse to allow you to do this unless you explicitly go and remove the old host key or write command line options.
But how many people just go in and go, oh, it must have changed by delete?
Possibly a lot, although if you run your own server, you should think, yeah. Why has it changed? What's going on? Perhaps a VPN, if your endpoint isn't a DNS and your client doesn't validate the server, connect. Hi, here's my certificate, here's my pre-shared key. Can I get in now? No, you can't, try again later, because I'm going to be doing it for you. An enum, perhaps. You could redirect voice over IP calls and steal them, and when James Jones' phone rings, I can answer it and say, hi, how you doing? Or someone else. Targets that are at risk, resolvers are used by service providers. People in this room, you can offer DNS service for your customers, those are targets. You have a lot of people behind them, poisoning that is very attractive for an attacker. Or perhaps a resolver inside the enterprise. Someone wants to target a specific company and say, haha, I want all those users from that enterprise to log into my system or want to steal their data. If you're running an authoritative server, it's safe. If it's not running a cache, then it doesn't matter. There's no cache to poison. You are splitting your authoritative and your recursive name servers, aren't you? Yes. DNSSEC, would it help? Maybe. So So you have a few signed zones that you are authoritative for. Great, that's a good first step. Will other operators of recursive name servers validate? Will they notice? Will they care? Odds are probably not. Perhaps you're validating answers then from authoritative servers. You're making sure that anything you're querying, anything that comes back that's signed, you're doing the validation. It's great. Well, are they even bothering to sign zone data? How many people are signing their zones today? Not enough. It won't solve the problem without other deployment. You can't do it on your own. If everyone today was using DNSSEC and we all solved all the problems and it all worked, great, this problem wouldn't exist. However, that's not the case. Everyone's still deploying name servers. They're still going live today with servers that have no DNSSEC configured whatsoever. As far as the .nz namespace is concerned, the registry